We'll get started. And hi, it's Diane. It is Thursday, December 17th. I'm here with the 8 o'clock group. So far, we have Stephanie and Melinda. Hi, guys. Hopefully, I think a few other people will be joining us. Usually, this group's a little bit bigger than this. But why don't we start with a check-in and celebration? Who wants to go first?
This is Stephanie. Last time we were getting Toby to try some new drugs for the afternoon that maybe wouldn't affect his appetite and his sleep so much. And we did try them, and we did a really good job of observing. Unfortunately, what we observed is that they give him terrible headaches. So we took him off that, and we're kind of backtracking a little bit on that foundation, that kind of stuff. But the good news is that I feel like I've been able to get him to talk to me a little more about what's going on and what he's feeling, and kind of in the moment when he's sort of either shutting down or acting out, to try to understand what's going on. So we'll keep trying to unravel all the little pieces.
Yeah, well, so it sounds like today's topic might be a really good one for you.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, Melinda, how about you? What are you celebrating, and how are things going for you?
Well, I guess the first thing on that list would be is that, and I think I brought I think I brought this up when I was with the other group, but I'm actually trying, I was trying to set things in motion to have my 14-year-old teenage son evaluated for whether he has ADHD. If he doesn't, he's probably got something similar, because there's just been a lot of, I've done a lot of reading more for myself over the years trying to figure out if I had it. But for some reason, in the last year or two, he seems to fall in a lot of the classic patterns, and I'm not sure if it's just teenagerhood or not. But one thing that we seem to be doing a little bit better with was at the beginning of this school year, he started becoming really oppositional and, you know, irritable and just, you know, angry or full of anxiety or stressed out or hyper or whatever. But I've gotten better at not... what would be the right word? I don't just react as much. I try to stay calm in the face of his not being calm, and he's actually, by be doing that more, I think he's actually started talking more a bit about, instead of just acting out, he started talking to me about some of the frustrations that he's been having this year with school. Because, except in the last 2 years, he was one of those kids that seemed to, you know, just sail through school, and so he's really frustrating him that he seems to be hitting a brick wall where there one didn't ever used to exist. And a lot of it has to do with he feels like he can't concentrate and can't absorb information the way he used to. So I'm going to be, I've talked with his teachers that I was going to try to have him evaluated. Oh, and I finally got the appointment scheduled today. That was the thing.
Awesome.
I interrupted myself. Awesome. That was where I was headed. But we actually got an appointment with the doctor. We got the whatever they're called. Not quite surveys, but anyway, we got the paperwork done.
Yeah, the assessment. The assessment. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, that's great. No, and I think that sometimes it's just, you know, I would encourage you to, well, obviously you're pursuing the diagnosis and trying to understand what's going on. And I think that one of the things that, that Elaine and I feel really strongly about our model and the work that we do is that it's not so much about the diagnosis as it is about a different way of parenting. And so whether he has a diagnosis or not, the stuff that, that you're mm-hmm. learning in this group is absolutely applicable. And you know, even activate the brain, which tends to be the one that's more based on the brain, the biology of what's going on in the ADHD brain, is applicable to everybody. And we'll find that tonight, because we're going to talk about one of the activating the brain issues, which is triggers. And that happens to everybody. It happens to adults. It happens to kids. It happens to ADHDers, non-ADHDers, people with anxiety. I mean, everybody has triggers of some sort or some fashion. And so encourage you to kind of think about it both directions. One is kind of focusing on figuring out what's really going on, and then the other is not worrying about what's going on and really focusing on supporting your child regardless of the diagnosis. Does that resonate for you?
It does. And I've, some of the talks I've had with him lately, we've have kind of headed towards that way, because we've been having I've been having to work later, so it's been harder to get everybody, because I have three kids. So it's been hard to get everybody who needs school homework help, say before midnight or even 1 o'clock in the morning and sometimes later. So we've not been getting good sleep. And so sometimes when he gets frustrated and he starts asking, you know, why is it so hard? I'll try to remind him. It's like, well, you know, and it's like, you know, when people don't get enough sleep, and when, you know, whether you have ADHD or just normal people, nobody does well if they're not getting enough sleep. So we need to try to, you know, we need to try to work on getting sleep like we need to more.
Yeah. Well,
and so
I guess that
things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess that leads me to kind of the next question, which is, you know, where do you most want to take aim in our conversation today?
That's a really good question. I mean, I could take aim at a whole lot of different things, but sleep is one of the biggest concerns we seem to have right now, especially with him. So trying to either recognize when it's time to just stop so we can go ahead and go to bed and not feel driven like, okay, well, I'm not done with this yet. I've got to stay up. But
before you go there, so hang on a second. Yeah, it does. And so let's drill in for a second and get curious. What is it?
Okay.
What do you think is his sticking point around about good sleep? Is he having a hard time falling asleep at night? Is he having a hard time with transitioning from something else to get to bed? Is it hormones that are helping him to stay up later? What do you think when you get curious?
Well, he's been, like I mentioned, I think earlier, he's been having difficulty with, I guess, focusing on schoolwork or feeling maybe overwhelmed with the sport that he has and therefore not really wanting to do it, things like that. So he has a tendency to put things off a bit, which then leads to, okay, now I'm behind. I can't go to bed. I have to stay up and get all this done. Sort of a combination.
Yeah,
so it's a challenge.
Yeah, I guess that's the question is, right, so is the real challenge, so we're going to focus on one challenge, is the focus on
okay.
The overwhelm, is the focus on the delay tactics, is the focus on the sleep, because I think that that's the piece of it. It sounds like if you don't tackle the first two, that you may not be able to get to, you may not be able to tackle the sleep because that's what's really leading, that's not the real problem. The real problem is causing the lack of sleep.
And when you say it like that, yeah, I think actually you're right. Sleep is probably not the best target. That's what we want to improve, but focusing on that is not what's going to improve it. It's maybe more focusing on probably the delay tactic piece of it, I think, which might even be focusing more on, if he didn't feel overwhelmed, he wouldn't want to delay. So maybe even more focusing on just trying to break things down into small pieces and focusing on one small piece at a time so we can maybe reduce some of that overwhelm.
So the breaking it down is actually a strategy, and it's a great strategy. And I'm going to encourage you when we're in this take aim stage to stay with the challenge rather than the solution. And it feels like your instinct is telling you that the overwhelm is leading to the delay. So what do you think about taking aim on his level of overwhelm?
I think what's causing his overwhelm is he's looking at the big picture of the complete amount of work he's got to get done between now and December 30th. And I know he's been working with his teacher on coming up with a schedule. So she's been giving him a little bit of leeway. He's in the class where it's supposed to be a bit more self-directed as far as the teacher is more, you're supposed to try to set your own schedule, and his teacher's been guiding him and been actually trying to change things up to figure out what works for him, which has been great. But he, I don't know. He seems to shy away from, like when I ask him how much do you need to get done today, he often doesn't really seem to know. He seems to think of it more in the big picture than, well, if I get this much done today and I get this much done tomorrow and I have it broken down, then as long as I keep making that progress, I'm going to get where I need to go.
Okay, so Melinda, I'm going to interrupt you for a second, okay?
Sure, that's fine.
So again, so the breaking it up, there's some great solutions that you can put in place, and that's so. But we want to take aim on the challenge rather than the solution as we start the conversation.
Okay.
You're gonna get to the solution in the end, and it may be that where you land is where you are right now, which is I got to come up with some strategies for helping him break it down so that he can reduce the overwhelm. But so if you can, if you're willing to play a little bit and take aim earlier in the process, which is what's the challenge? Is it the overwhelm? Or is it the delay tactics, which one feels, or something else? But again, it's the challenge rather than the solution where it's where we want to take aim.
Okay. Well, if we're looking at overwhelm versus delay tactics, I think delay tactic is a result of overwhelm, so overwhelm's farther back in line.
Okay. So let's just stay there for a little bit and see. And if you decide to change your mind halfway through the call, then you're more than welcome to do that. How does it feel to kind of start with taking aim on your kids, on your 14-year-old's overwhelm?
I think that feels good. That feels like a good place to start.
Okay, great. Stephanie, what about you?
For during the class, I'd like to focus on actually on my own triggers, and I'm not sure that was what you meant when you thought that was the topic. But,
no, that's fine. That's what we did earlier. Somebody earlier today, a bunch of people did the same thing. So,
when I think of triggers,
gets really specific. Is there one particular area where you tend to get triggered more than anything else, Stephanie?
I think either bedtime or turning off screen time. But when people don't listen when I'm asking them to get ready for bed or asking them to turn off the screen.
Okay, so when people don't listen, particularly around bedtime and screen time, got it.
Yep. I don't even know if they're not listening, so it's not complying.
Got it. So let's write down complying.
Yes.
And when we get further into this, I may push you to choose between bedtime or screen time. But for now, it's non-compliance, and it's your triggers when people don't comply, and those are two particular areas where you notice that it happens a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And somebody else joined us. Who else is here? Sandy. Sandy, is that you?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was on mute. Yes.
Awesome. So why don't you, let's do three things. Celebrate, check in, and let us know where you want to take aim.
Okay, so that's us. I would say I've been trying to work on my son's doing homework, as you know, and kind of keeping up with things. He's got one class he's way behind in, and that he wants to take do wrestling, to do a sport, and his GPA's too low, so I kind of brought it up. I guess I'm taking kind of it takes a village approach and trying to work with some of the the coach and a guidance teacher at school to try to have him agree to do this extra help work, which you'd think most people would want to do, but he hasn't participated for some reason. So the incentive, I guess, has become the, hey, you can participate in the sport if you, agree to do this extra help and kind of have a game plan. I know that sounds roundabout, but
So is specifically the challenge is that he's not eligible for wrestling, and you feel like it's something that's really helpful for him. Was that how you would bottom line the challenge?
That's kind of a secondary one, but you're right in that that's a leverage point. It's a real incentive. He's actually caring more about that than one of his classes right now. So, I was taking aim at is, he's got to get extra help. He's just not able to do this on his own. So I've offered all sorts of, like a tutor or, all sorts of options. But he's for some reason really reluctant to do it. So I think this might be kind of a good leverage point.
So the solution you're giving is the using the motivation as the leverage. So the challenge is helping them to keep up in this one particular class? Is that how you would articulate it?
Yeah. I guess so, yeah.
Okay. Awesome. And I want to check one more time to see if anybody else has joined us. Nope, it's just so we've got Stephanie and Sandy and Melinda. Okay, so did everybody take aim? Stephanie's my triggers, Melinda's overwhelm, and Sandy is keeping up in this one particular class. Which class is it, just out of curiosity?
Algebra 2.
Algebra. Okay. So we are talking about triggers tonight. And does anybody have their workbook open and can tell us all what page we're on? Because I don't have mine open. I can pull mine up if I need to.
I think it's 25.
25 is triggers? What we're talking about. Okay, great. Thank you. And people pretty quickly in this program figure out that this is probably my number one topic, and I firmly believe that, you know, that we're brought here on some level to teach the things we most need to learn. And I am a recovering yeller, and have done a lot of work on triggers, and really clearly feel like this is such an important piece in our work for lots of reasons. I think that when we understand the biology underneath triggers and getting triggered and getting our buttons pushed and that sort of thing, you know, it helps us to really see how important it is to really manage them in a way so that we can parent effectively and that we can really engage our kids in problem-solving mode. And I think that that's really kind of the bottom line of this whole thing is that when you're triggered, we know that in order to be effective parents, and in order to engage with our kids appropriately, everybody has to be in problem-solving mode. And when we're triggered, it's literally impossible to do that. And so if you think about kind of the biology of getting triggered, and it goes back to very, you know, primal, caveman-y kinds of stuff, is that when emergencies happen, your body needs to be able to react. And so, you know, if you're being chased by a mountain lion or, you know, the other time that you hear about the energy that we're talking about is, you know, if a car falls on top of your kid and you need to be able to lift it up, you know, these women and men with superhuman strength, you know, it really is very primal and very, it's amygdala-based, which is the base of the brain. And what happens is that because our body needs to be able to take care of an emergency situation, lots of other parts of our body shut down. And the important one to us in this situation is that the frontal lobe, which is where the executive function is, shuts down. And the frontal lobe is what we who are not ADHD need to problem solve, and the frontal lobe is what everybody needs for everything. But if you happen to be ADHD as well, and your frontal lobe shuts down, your ability to, you know what to do and when to do it and to avoid doing things that you really would rather not do and not do stupid stuff is really is much more impacted. And so for our kids, if they're triggered, their ability to problem solve with us, their ability to be respectful, their ability to not lose their temper, their ability, all these things just get really greatly impeded. And again, it's completely normal and it's completely biological. So it's really like a light switch. When we get triggered, the hormones start racing and the brain shuts down and we go into fight or flight mode. And so it's really important to realize that if we want to be able to parent, that it's really difficult to do. Raise your hands, right? How hard is it to try to parent or problem solve when you're triggered? I mean, what you really want to do is you want to make it stop or you want to run away, and that's fight or flight. And I kind of call it search and destroy mode. You know, it's like if you're triggered, it's like, this isn't going to happen. I'm going to fix this. Nobody's going to get one over me. Or I got to get out of here. Where's the closet? I'm hiding in the closet. I'm running away. I'm going to go for a drive, whatever it is, if you happen to be flight. And so it's important when we're trying to really work with our kids and to move things forward that we are managing our triggers and that we're managing their triggers proactively so that we can continue to problem solve rather than to, you know, to be in this more intense situation. Because the reality is that that intense energy is really powerful. If you're being chased by a mountain lion, you need that intense, those hormones and that racing energy. But, you know, it from a biology perspective, the mountain lion doesn't look any different than when you go in the online system and you see that your kid has an F in math class. You know, it's that same sort of threat. And if we live in that constant, you know, our kids have lots of opportunity to screw up. And if we live in that constant sense of trigger, it's going to be really difficult to problem solve and to move things forward. So we talk a lot about triggers on the site. There's lots of great articles out there, and I know we'll send you some in the email on Monday next week, but I wanted to just kind of briefly go through the four steps of managing triggers. We call it the escaping the threat cycle, and so you'll find that in different articles and different programs and materials and that sort of thing. And the first step is really understanding what your triggers are. And so, or what you're, if you're talking about your kid being triggered and your kid having meltdowns or whatever it is, it's about understanding what those triggers are. And for most of us, you know, it might, in the moment, we may not be able to reflect and go, oh, wow, I'm really being triggered by this situation right now, you know, because we're triggered and it's hard to be conscious and pay attention. But at the end of each day, you might kind of go, well, gee, what really got my goat today? Or what pushed my buttons? And maybe if you like to journal or take notes, write down about it. I have parents who actually do trigger journals for their kids. So if they have kids who are really prone to meltdowns, they'll actually write down, you know, my kid had 4 meltdowns today, and here's what happened right before, and here's what I noticed. They were hungry, or they were tired, or they, you know, they were disappointed, or whatever it was. And so you really kind of begin to, you know, do that curiosity step of our model and really kind of understand what it is that's going on with the triggers and what practically it is that's triggering us. And then if it's for our own triggers, I would encourage you to take it a step further and say, what's really going on with this trigger? And so, for example, I gave the online grading system, and I know that for me, the online grading system used to be a huge trigger. I couldn't even go in there without, you know, without just cringing. It was always just this really traumatic thing for me because I would just be terrified that I'd go in there and find some unexpected thing, and I would feel completely out of control, and there was nothing I could do about it. And I'd go to these worst-case scenarios. It's like, oh, my gosh, my child's going to fail out of school. He's not going to get into the school he wants to get into for college. He's going to end up living on my couch when he's 34. He's never going to get a job. I mean, it's those things that we tend to do when we get triggered. And the second step is to really understand what's the voice in your head, right? So I just shared with you some of the voices in my head in that moment. I'm looking at the F on the screen, and my brain's already assuming he's going to lose every job that he's ever going to have. And what I feel is out of control. And so what happens for a lot of us, and fear is a big driver of these triggers, is that we feel like we don't have control, or we're afraid of losing control, or we're afraid that we can't get control. So there's usually some fear underneath it. Or there's some self-blame and some self-doubt. The other thing that triggers a lot of people is if, you know, so for example, same instance, you know, you've got a kid who's speaking disrespectfully. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. How is he going to ever be able to hold a job? Or was I a bad mom that caused this, you know, this resistance? You know, what's really going on here? So we might point externally, we might point internally, but it's about understanding what the voice in your head says underneath the trigger. The second step is reclaiming your brain. So you want to, when you know you do get triggered, you want to be able to get back into problem-solving mode somehow. And so that might be a few good deep breaths. It might be a timeout with a commitment to come back. Water is a great, great tool for reclaiming your brain. I have clients who walk around with water bottles all day to manage their triggers. And it's really because, you know, when we talked about triggers, we said that, you know, you go to that primal part of your brain. We call it the amygdala hijack, because that frontal lobe shuts down and you're in that primal part of your brain. And if you take a couple sips of water, you know, the animal in our brain goes, oh, I'm in a watering hole. Everything must be safe now. And we can kind of get back into the problem-solving mode and out of the fight-or-flight mode. So a few deep breaths, some water, a little timeout, you know, do some things that are going to help calm you down. Or, again, work with your child. If your child is the one with the triggers, you know, helping your child to learn what are my tools for calming myself down, teaching your child to take deep breaths. My daughter was having a little bit of an anxiety attack this morning thinking about her finals, and so we did some deep breathing and some, you know, kind of visualization, mindfulness sorts of stuff before school to kind of help her to remember, okay, how am I going to get through this day that's really pretty scary for me? So that's the second step, is reclaim your brain. The third step is to really choose a different perspective. And so if you know, my perspective is, oh my gosh, my kid's going to end up not getting to the college that he wants, and he's going to end up living on my couch when he's 38, and it's triggering me. If I'm willing to consider that just because he gets an F in math at the midterm, it doesn't mean that he's going to live on my couch when he's 38 necessarily. You know, I'm willing to consider that there's time between now and then to redirect, to solve the problem, to help him to move forward, to move into success, those sorts of things. And so you want to choose a different perspective. Sometimes it's like if you've got a child who's speaking disrespectfully to you, and if you're going, this is a disrespectful kid, they're bad, I can't believe they're doing this, they can't talk to me like that, you're getting triggered. If you can shift it and go, my child's having a really hard time being respectful right now, I wonder what's going on. Sometimes just that subtle shift of, instead of, I can't believe they're doing this, to, wow, they're really having a hard time doing this, how can I help, can be a really good shift. And then once you've chosen that new perspective that you're willing to consider as true, you move forward with from that perspective. So I'm going to treat this situation very differently. If I think my kid is just a bad kid who's being disrespectful, I'm more likely to punish, right? If I'm thinking about a kid who's having a hard time speaking respectfully, I might redirect them, or I might coach them, or I might, you know, help them to calm down so that they can get into a space where they can be respectful. So I'm going to treat the situation very differently. So those are the four steps around the threat cycle. So it's understanding triggers, reclaiming your brain, choosing a new perspective, and then moving forward from the new perspective. So I'm curious kind of what comes up for you guys around triggers generally, or in terms of this tool of escaping the threat cycle.
This is Stephanie, and I think the regaining control of the brain is the hardest step, especially if, like, I've gone from being annoyed to, like, I'm finally angry. Like, I didn't intervene soon enough. And so then I don't want to regain control. I'm mad.
Right, because you know, getting mad, because releasing some of that mad energy feels good, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of does. And I'm kind of like, you know, now it's your turn to feel the wrath, you know? Like, I mean, I don't really, like, I mean, 5 minutes later, I don't feel that way. But in the moment, I do. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you guys suck, and you all deserve to get screamed at, you know?
Yeah. But, no, absolutely. And it makes perfect sense. And so part of that, Stephanie, is about understanding your own escalation cycle.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like, do you go 1, 2, 3, 100? You know, if 100 is completely triggered and 0 is not triggered, you know, so it's just part of it is to know and to pay attention. And I even notice where I feel it in my body when I start to get upset, you know, the hair stands up on the back of my neck and I start to get that tightness in my neck and in my chest, and it's just, you know, I know that I'm starting to get upset, and so it's about becoming more and more aware of the escalation. And if you know that it's not effective to yell, catching yourself and going, you know what, I don't care what's going on in this moment, I don't care if it's 10 o'clock at night and they're not in bed, I need to go calm down, and 5 minutes to calm down if they get to bed 5 minutes later, it's not going to be the end of the world. If I end up screaming at my kids, it could have if I had to trade off the two of them, I'm going to choose to let them be up 5 extra minutes. Does that resonate with you?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of having the faith that if I do calm down, I will think of a way of getting them to bed. Or rather than just, I think, well, my other option is, well, then I just don't care. It's their problem, and I walk away. You know, walk away. But sort of something in between walking away and screaming.
Well, so if you think about it, I'm just walking away, I don't care, is really flight. So it's like,
yeah, you're right.
Fine, you deal with it. You're never going to change. I don't care. You know, that's more of a flight kind of response.
Right.
If you say, I need to take a break right now and step out of this and then step back in, you're right. If you aren't triggered, you are going to be more able to stay in that problem-solving mode and figure out a way to get them to transition to bedtime. Right. And you're learning all kinds of cool tools in this program. My guess is that you're not going to remember any of them. If you're triggered, you're going to remember a lot more of them if you're calm, right?
Yeah. No, that's just funny because Brian and I have been talking about making the cheat sheet and where it is of the tools because, like, in the moment, it's so hard to remember them. And I'm just thinking that maybe I was going to put the cheat sheet in the pantry, but maybe I need to put another copy in my own bathroom that I can look at when I go to breathe in there.
It's a great idea. Yeah. Or maybe, you know, a picture with some nice, peaceful, you know, place on the beach where you can
right.
imagine yourself not with any kids, but just enjoying the beach or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yep. Sandy or Melinda, what do you think?
Hey, this is Melinda. I was on mute, I think, before.
Yep.
I liked what you were saying about, dealing with, you know, recognizing if your child's behavior is triggering you, recognize that more as, try to focus more on the fact that they're having difficulty. Take some time so that you can defuse your trigger and then go back to the child and focus on, you know, what is causing this behavior than the behavior itself. That was pretty helpful.
So you're redirecting your energy is what it sounds like. Does that, what's hard about that for you?
I guess trying to stay mindful enough to do it. Because I also have, one of my triggers is also non-compliance. You might say that I think Stephanie mentioned earlier. You tell them it's time to do something or it's time to change doing something. And one technique I try to do is I try to give them some time before it's time to stop. I do try to say, okay, in 15 minutes or in 5 minutes. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, and trends, stuff like this, so it's really, non-compliance is really about three things. Number one is making sure that you've been clear in your request. And actually, I've got a really good blog about this. I think it's titled How to Get Anybody to Do What You Want Them to, What You Need Them to Do. But it's, you know, you need to make sure that you're clear in your request. And number one, you need to make sure that you're communicating it in a way that they actually can hear it. So if your kid's in the middle of a really intense video game and you holler something from downstairs, I'm sorry, but you haven't instructed them. There's just no way that a normal kid will hear that. Even if they say, yeah, mom, chances are they probably haven't really heard it. And then the second piece of it is setting a realistic expectation, and you were just describing that. So it's kind of like, you know, is it realistic that when you say time for bed, that they immediately, you know, put down the controller, press the computer off, and walk compliantly to the bedroom? Well, it's for most kids, particularly our kids who get hyper-focused, it's hard to do that. I mean, how many times have you been watching a movie and you're like looking at your clock going, oh, man, I really should go to bed, but this movie is so good. I don't want to turn it off. It's like, oh, can I record it and watch it tomorrow? Oh, I don't have time to, whatever. You know, and it's like it's really hard to break away from stuff you enjoy doing. And so if you can kind of have that compassion and understand that breaking away is hard, and that's the shift in perspective. So it's not so much that my kid is being disrespectful and non-compliant. How does it change things around to say, my kid's really having a hard time following up on my directions right now?
And I guess that's kind of the way you have to look at it in order to try to keep yourself from being triggered over it.
Yes, and the other piece of it is that a lot of times what happens is kind of goes back to the naughty versus neurological that we've talked about before. You know, so it's like if I think he's being naughty and non-compliant, I'm going to punish. And punishing, the kids are like, wait a second, what? How do you, wait? And it doesn't work a lot of times because it's not logic-based because it's not that your child is being naughty. It's really that they're having a hard time following through for a variety of different reasons. So the two reasons there. That makes sense. So, Melinda, when you think about the overwhelm and the delay, how much does that trigger you when you notice him staying up till midnight trying to get homework done?
A lot of times it's not just him staying up, it's I'm staying up with him because he says he needs help, which sometimes he does. Which, well, I don't know. I think it may actually be a combination of things. Right over here. Sorry, I happen to be at Walmart with my son right now trying to get a watch too. But it's
I think you win the prize for the best multitasking here. You're at Walmart buying a watch. I love that.
Anyway, I'm trying to think. I feel like I lost my thought for a second. Ask me the question again, because I think I forgot.
The question was you were talking about how you end up staying up with him, and the question was, you know, whether there are any triggers underneath for you underneath this staying up late thing.
That's an interesting question. Probably partly, in a way, maybe it's just like that. Part of the reason why I find myself, I don't know if this is a trigger or more like an internal conflict. Part of me wants to tell him, wants to put my foot down and say, okay, look, you know, you can't stay up this late. You can't keep staying up this late. And part of me says to the other part of me that says, well, but if you make him go to bed.
Oop, you got cut off. If you make him go to bed, what? Yeah, no, so I'm having a hard time hearing you. You got quiet all of a sudden. But I think what you're saying is that there's a value conflict there because there's part of you that says, you know, I want him to get sleep, and there's part of them that says, but wait, if he goes to bed now, he's not going to get his homework done. And so what happens, honestly, is that a conflict, whenever a conflict happens, conflict is the same energy that fight or flight energy is. And so that's what happens is when we feel that conflict and we don't know how to resolve it, that's when we get triggered. So if we,
right.
You know, it's like if we want our kids to be successful, but we want them to, learn their own lessons, sometimes that creates conflict. And when it creates conflict, then it tends to trigger us because we don't know how to solve the problem of how to have our kids do both things.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense.
Sandy, what about you?
Kind of a question, actually, too, because I was thinking, trying to define what happened this afternoon with triggers. And we had an appointment scheduled with a therapist, and I had told him in advance, and about an hour before, I mentioned it to him, and he said, you know, I don't really feel like going, and. So it was this defiance coming through, which is kind of a theme. Now, and I mean, of course, that's a trigger for me. Uh-oh, you know.
Right.
How do you, I mean, I can calm down. I can, you know, I can drink water, everything, but how do you ultimately...
So hang on a second. So, Sandy, what's the trigger? What's the voice in your head say when he does that?
Well, it's happened before, so I'm thinking... Okay, this is, you know, it's important for him to go, number one. And then two is like, oh, my God, I'm just going to waste my money, you know. It's just a big waste. And then you get kind of embarrassed that you set this up and don't have any ability to control them to get there, you know, to agree to go.
So you feel embarrassment, you feel out of control, and you feel kind of stupid because it feels like you might even waste your money.
Yeah, but I mean, I think and also I go a little bit of a failure because I'm thinking, you know, this is part of a solution to, you know, things. I think this is really important to go. And I think he agrees, but I honestly think sometimes he just says no just to get me upset.
Yeah. Well, so there's really two sides of this. So one is, how do you manage when you're getting triggered over it? Because you're right. I mean, and it's a normal reaction when you feel like that failure button gets pushed, right? It's like, oh, man, I can't believe this. Why can't I get my kid to do this one thing that he needs more than anything else in the world? Am I a bad mom? Whatever it is, right, that the voice in your head is saying. So, you know, you need to be willing to consider that this is not a reflection on you and that this is not a bad kid. And this is just a problem that you can absolutely solve and can engage him in solving over time. So are you willing to consider that's true?
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's the first step, is kind of keeping that foremost and staying out of triggered mode. Because if you're triggered and you're feeling like a failure, you're not going to solve the problem, which is, how do I help get him to this appointment? You're either going to push, because you're going to be like fight, and you know, and you're going to try to force the issue, which doesn't often work with many of our kids, or you're going to just throw your hands up in the air and say, why bother? And I don't know whether you tend to be, are you more fight or flight? Which one are you?
I try to fight first, and then I, you know, yeah, at some point.
And then you throw
like,
your hand up in the air.
Yeah.
It'll never change. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's pretty common. So what do you think you could do differently on that first piece first? Because I think that what I'm hearing underneath this is, yeah, but Diane, I got to solve the problem. So yes, and let's keep you in problem-solving mode first.
So how can I avoid this?
How can you, when you start to notice that you're getting triggered, what could you do?
I thought I kind of did it, actually, which was just, you know, remain calm and said, you know, remember you were with me when we set this appointment up, you know, with him, and in the event that didn't really work. And then I said, you know, imagine if you were, if this was your business, and all of a sudden an hour before the appointment, somebody calls and says they can't come. Or even 10 minutes before they come. And you know, they now have no, you know, you'd have no time to replace that person. And you know, and it'd
okay,
be
so let me interrupt you for
a
second. So what you're describing is the logic that you're using to try to convince your son to go. So it makes logical sense to me. It makes logical sense to you. So what do you know about your kid in that moment? Triggered or not triggered?
Oh, from what I was saying, or do you mean before?
No, it's before.
Oh, yeah.
He's triggered. That's why he doesn't want to go. He's afraid. He's upset.
Right.
He feels out of control. Why are you making me do this? You shouldn't be able to make me do this. I don't want to do this. I don't understand why I have to do this. I mean, think about it. On a scale of 0 to 10, how triggered is he in that moment?
Oh, he was triggered, yeah. It's
okay.
It's funny because it seems relatively calm, but you're right. By doing a defiant thing, obviously there was something there.
No, and this is the thing for our kids, is that the moment before they go to fight or flight, they go on the defensive or they go on the offensive. And so if you've got a kid who's playing the blame game or being like, not me, you can't, you know, they're doing the defensive sort of thing, that's the precursor that they're starting to get. They're escalating. So that's one of your signals. And so, again, if your child is triggered, it's no different than if you're triggered. Is he going to be able to problem solve with you when he's triggered?
No.
No. So job number one is stay calm yourself and manage your own triggers. Job number two is notice when your kid is triggered, and instead of trying to be logical and convince them and problem solve with them, first help them to get calmed down. And it's going to be hard because in that moment, you need him to get out the door. And teaching your child how to stay calm when they're getting triggered takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, it does.
So one of the things, and especially this works really well with older kids and you know, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, that sort of thing, even younger as well, you know, if you begin to have a conversation in the family about getting triggered, because here's the thing, I'm going to normalize it for you guys. Everybody gets triggered. You may not get triggered as easily. You may not get triggered by the same things. You may not look the same when you're triggered, but everybody gets triggered. It's a human experience. And part of what can be really valuable in a family is if you teach your kids how to handle it when you get triggered and teach them how to handle it when somebody else gets triggered. You know, so it can be a great conversation, and I still remember doing this, you know, as a single mom. It's like when I get triggered, you know, 15 minutes later when I'd calm down, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that really wasn't very effective at all. I'd come in and I'd have a conversation with them about what it feels like to get triggered, and didn't mom look like a crazy woman when she was yelling like that? And it's really normal, but it's not okay to you know, to get that intense. And have you ever felt that way? And what was it like? And and what do you think you could do about it? And you begin to have that conversation and begin to learn as a family, well, what do we want to do when one of us gets triggered? What do you want to do when you get triggered? It doesn't feel exhausting to be triggered, and it just was really a great way to just really raise the awareness in the family of something that's normal, but that really does create some difficulty for everybody. So what in that stands out for you, Sandy?
I think that the reclaim his brain is really challenging for me.
Okay.
So and I guess I didn't recognize the trigger at first. I guess I just see it as defiance, but to your point, I need to look deeper and try to catch it before, because I knew that this might be a problem. So I should have really thought through what could be the triggers beforehand. I think control, you mentioned before, I think that might be it.
Well,
you
and
know,
for a lot
him.
Of teenagers, that's really key. So it's kind of like we don't give, when they don't feel like they have a choice, they're kind of like, teens are kind of like three-year-olds. And I don't remember, you remember the terrible twos and the threes? It's like, if you give them a choice, suddenly everything's okay. And I still remember my daughter, because she's like total control. She's like most powerful woman I knew when she was 2 years old, right? And she'd be like, no, Mom, I'm not brushing my teeth. So, you'd go, okay, sweetie, do you want to brush your teeth standing up or do you want to brush your teeth sitting down? And she'd be like, I want to brush my teeth sitting down. And it's suddenly, because I gave her a choice, she felt in control again, and it shifted her out of fight or flight mode. And it's the same thing with our teenagers. If we find ways to give them control. So a therapist is a great example. I've got one of my friends is engaging a therapist for her daughter, and she's letting her daughter interview the therapist. She's giving her three different choices, and she's saying, okay, which one do you think is, you know, a better fit for you? I don't, you know, and this is an older teen, but, you know, and you can do that sort of thing where it's kind of like, would you rather go to this kind of type of a program or this type of program? Would you rather go on Tuesdays or Thursdays? Just kind of creating an environment where you're giving them some kind of control in a situation that feels really out of control. Because here's the reality, if he's having to go to get support, he feels broken, right? Because anybody would. It's kind of like, oh, man,
yeah.
I got to go to therapy. And so when you feel broken, you feel out of control. Why can't I do this myself? Why can't I fix this? It doesn't make any sense to me. You know, so it's his ability to stay calm and not get triggered can be really impeded.
That's a good point, yeah.
Okay. Other thoughts, either just about this conversation I was having with Sandy or generally about triggers? I've got a minute here. If anybody has a particular laser coaching question they have, I'm happy to jump in and tackle something quickly if we haven't already.
This is Melinda. I have maybe a quick question. Do you have any advice on how to
how to start a family discussion on triggers when we're not triggered so that we can talk about it? Is there like a good opener or something?
Yeah, no, I would tell you that it's, you know, the best time when I would go to apologize. And I always, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, you should make amends when you yell more than you want to. I'd go apologize, and I would say, and we would just kind of say, you know, wasn't that crazy? What was it like? Mom was like an entirely different person, and have you ever felt that way? I mean, so it was really kind of in the moment as a way of being transparent and being vulnerable, honestly. And I found that, you know, a lot of parents really want to be good role models. One of the dads was talking about that on the call earlier today about how he wants to be a clear role model to his kids about how to handle triggers as a way to help them to learn how to handle theirs. The other thing you can do is if you see somebody else do it, like if you're watching a movie and somebody loses it on a movie, or if you see, like, my mom's in town this week, and she at dinner time brought up a conversation. She witnessed some guys fighting at the mall, and you know, we had a conversation about it at dinner. And so sometimes it's stuff like that where it's like completely neutral. And how do you think it felt to get that angry? And what do you think it was like? Have you ever been that angry? And you ever seen anybody that angry before? And wow, isn't that interesting? You know, and so, you know, just kind of asking curious questions is a way to kind of get them to talk, could be a way to have it happen. How does that resonate?
So kind of like trying to use teachable moments, whether it's yourself or whether it's another situation they observed. Okay.
Yes, love that. Thank you for teachable moments. That's great. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
So we need to do our wrap-up. So I think that the wrap-up must be on 26 if the lesson was on 25. So let's, you know, there's four questions we answer at the end of every call. So let's take a minute and answer the four questions, and then would love to hear from all three of you guys what, you know, what a big aha, what an aha was for you, and then what you want to do in terms of action. So the first question is, what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? The second question is, what became clear, or what was my aha? The third question is, what is a realistic action step for me to take? And the fourth is, what do I need to do to set myself up for success? So take a few minutes, write down some notes, and then would love to hear from each of you when you're ready.
This is Stephanie, and since I know people are going to be beating down the door any second, I'll go first. I think was a good flashback to when my kids were younger. I think someone had told me, and it was a preschool teacher, who that, you know, if you're getting really angry, it probably means that you needed to set the limit earlier. And I think that's really the same advice that sort of rang true for me with the trigger coaching you were giving me, which is to notice earlier in the cycle that I'm getting annoyed before I'm so angry that I am ready to just walk away or yell at them, and to stop and say, okay, you know, whatever I am doing isn't working, so what else can I try, or what's going on with them to still move things ahead? So I will be watching for that. And when is that moment? And, you know, how early do I need to keep pulling it back?
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think is going to be most important for you to remember?
And if I do get angry, to go, you know, go take a break and try again after I calm down. And then to say, next time I got to try earlier before I'm that angry. Because I actually have a fairly long fuse about lots of things, but not these particular issues.
Well, and so the challenge I would give you, if I can, is to really to notice what's the voice in your head? What's the trigger really about? What's the fear? And really get clear about it, because that will help you to go, oh, how true is that? And am I willing to consider that something else am I willing to consider that something else might happen instead of this thing that I'm terrified of suddenly?
Right.
Okay. Cool.
Okay.
Cool.
Thanks.
All right, ladies, there's two more of you. Who's going to check out next?
This is Sandy. I think what stood out today for me was the defiance. I never really, I guess I was thinking of it differently, but when there's defiance behavior, then I've already missed the trigger, you know. It's kind of the reaction and, you know, don't take that personally, but I need to better recognize and identify the key triggers that cause that reaction and try to head them off beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard because our kid's being defiant and it doesn't occur to us that our kid is really overwhelmed or stressed out because all we see is defiant. And it looks like, and defiance looks very powerful, doesn't it?
Oh my God, yeah.
And so it does. And it's like, okay, it's scary. It's like they're in control. They're in complete control. They know exactly what they're doing. Well, no, they feel completely out of control. And so they're grabbing onto whatever shred of control they can possibly grab onto, which is a really very normal reaction, in order to feel normal again. Cool. All right. Yeah. Who's last? Stephanie, have you gone yet?
I did.
You think that's me?
Oh, Melinda hasn't gone yet. Melinda, are you out of Walmart? Are you still there?
No, I'm still there, but we're actually about to walk away from the watch counter. We got our watch. Yay.
Okay.
I think I'm trying to remember. Unfortunately, I don't have the workbook with me. But so we were talking about, I guess what we were focusing on, which was overwhelm. And one of the things that got brought up during this call that I think was the aha for me is it was overwhelm not related to schoolwork, but overwhelm related to sibling conflict that we seem to keep going through over and over again with my teenage son and his 10-year-old youngest sister. And I've been I've been running this same treadmill where he'll do something to tweak her, she blows up, and then he tweaks her again, I guess, like to try to escalate, and then I jump in and try to stop it because it's just escalating too fast. And then I try to reason with him, and he always thinks that I'm just getting onto him, and why am I not getting onto her? So I need to stop doing that. I need to stop trying to be logical and reasonable when people are being triggered.
Mm-hmm. Well, and actually somebody at some point, my kids are only 19 months apart, and I read an article at some point that says never call one of them out, even if it's clear that they're both, even if it's clear that one of them's screwing up. And to say, the two of you need to figure this out, or the two of you need to stop, you know, this needs to stop, or something more neutral instead of something that feels like it's taking sides. And that's
right.
A really, I love that tip because it's gotten me, it's kept things a lot saner because then your kid doesn't end up reacting to you because all of a sudden you're ganging up on them.
Right. So that part of the call was a big aha for me.
Cool. Awesome. All right, ladies. So our next call is in 3 weeks. So our next call is going to be on January 7th. Happy New Year to everybody. Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas. And we will. That'll be the next call. There's no lifeline calls or anything in the next 2 weeks. If you need anything, post on Facebook, tag us. We'll be jumping in and out while over the next couple weeks. But hope everybody has a great holiday season.
You too.
Thanks.
You
too.
Thanks,
everybody.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye.